Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
I did not expect to be playing that song again this week, ladies. And yet, here we are. Hello, everyone. It's your good friend, Patrick O'Dowd, joined, of course, by David Ungar, welcoming you in to another edition of Hockey Talk here on the ChairShot Radio Network, part of thechairshot.com, where we remind you to always use your head. And Dave, last week, we were joking, and I was like, I thought we were going to come in here talking about a sweep. And Edmonton said, not so fast, my friend, to quote the great Lee Corso, and kept the Stanley Cup final going. And at the end of that show, I was like, you know, we'll probably be talking about a Stanley Cup champion, but you never know. Well, Edmonton said, you never know. And here we are airing on a special Monday night or Monday morning edition of Hockey Talk. Because, folks, we have a Game 7 tonight after this podcast. We were recording this the day before, but by the time you hear it, it will be tonight in what is on the verge of a historic comeback, not since 1947? 45, I was in between. When the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Oh, no, that's 42. That's 42.
42, only team in history to come back from a 3-0 deficit in a Stanley Cup final to win the Stanley Cup. Edmonton has an opportunity to join their Canadian brethren. And Dave, neither one of us can say we predicted it at all. We were coming off, last week's episode, we were coming off the heels of what we kind of termed Edmonton with like a last gasp kind of show we belong here kind of moment in the series. They win big. They went 8-1. And we're thinking, this is good. I don't know that it feels like too little too late. Yet here we are. And I'm going to hand this over to you. Florida looks spooked. They looked out of sorts. I made this comment, and you can comment it. Like, at one point I was like, where's Barkov? Because he had like not been there. And he's the only guy, and right after I texted you that, he like immediately scored on a very nifty play that even that by itself felt fluky. Like, it's not like it was a horrible Edmonton turnover. And that was the only, like, that was the only life for the Florida Panthers. They pulled their goalie with like 2 minutes to go, and we got two empty netters, 5-1 final. And it is all Edmonton as we head back to Florida for a huge Game 7. And predictions aside, we're not going to talk about predictions yet. How has Edmonton done it? How have they made this comeback happen?
Well, they, I think, you know, you go back to the third period of game three, and that's where this whole thing changed, right? And I think, you know, okay, Edmonton scored a couple goals, got it close to 4-3, had some chances to tie. But I think the main thing that Edmonton has done is they have crushed the Florida defense. And Florida's defense and the way Florida plays their game, which is zone control, keep everything in front of you, don't give up these breaks. Edmonton Cat has gotten, he figured out a way to leave the zone early, get people into the rush quickly, get numbers advantages, and they are burying every single chance that they have. Every single one. Their stars are playing lights out. Florida can't keep up with them. Bobrovsky has gone from being unstoppable to he's just like let everything in sort of thing. And I'm not, I know what you're going to say. I'm not blaming it all on him, but he is not the Bobrovsky of the first three games. And let's give
credit. Oh, no, not at all.
Give credit where it's due. Stuart Skinner has turned into the better goalie in this series, especially like, you look at game five, which is the one where Florida, if they were going to win, it was going to be game five. And you and I was like at the grocery store and we were exchanging messages, and Florida had all the momentum in that third period. They got it to 4-3, and they could, if they could have tied, I think Florida probably wins the series in overtime and that sort of thing,
right.
But they couldn't because Stuart Skinner just shut them down. And that's like where this series is right now is I agree with you. Florida's spooked and they should be. And, you know, they just, the stars of Edmonton have dominated the last few games. And you look at game six, Connor McDavid, no shots on goal, not a single point, doesn't matter. Leon Draisaitl shows up and takes over the
game. Finally shows up, yeah. By the way, finally.
Yeah, he shows up. Adam Henrique, he's won a cup, and he's like the one guy in Edmonton who they are leaning on for veteran leadership right now. He's been huge in the past couple of games. So yeah, I know we'll get to predictions and stuff like that in a little bit, but I just think the stars for Edmonton have shown up. The big thing is that Edmonton keeps scoring first and they get these multiple goal leads. And yes, Florida has all the offensive firepower in the world to get in a shootout with Edmonton and win, but that's not who they are. That's not their style of game. And they are playing Edmonton's having to play Edmonton style of game the past few games, and they can't do it.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that I've noticed that Edmonton has done to Florida and has really flummoxed them is they have negated the Florida forecheck. Like you talk about, they're a puck control team, and they wear you down. They grind you down. They live in your zone, and they make you work. And that has not been the case for Edmonton through this run. And that forecheck has to take charge if they are going to avoid a historic collapse. And the memes are a-flowing right now with the look it could collapse. And it's blowing mind-boggling to me. And you talk about that game five, where going out of that game five, in that third period, and I know you talked about them not getting that equalizer, I still felt like the end of game five felt very much like the end of game
one,
it was game one, because it was the game where Edmonton played in control for the first half of that game. However, they couldn't score. And eventually Florida in the second half of that game really took over and got their lead, you know, and that was that. In game five, I remember as we were commenting back and forth, when it got to 4-3, and I was like, man, Florida's really pouring it on here, and Edmonton is just trying to survive. And to their credit, they did. But I walked out of that game being like, okay, this game's going to probably end in game six, because Florida looked like they got their swagger back. And then Edmonton turn around, and the next thing you know, they're up 3-0. And it's like, you know, and you pointed it out, breakaways. You know, a 2-on-1 breakaway. The pass that Draisaitl made, though, on that first goal is just, it reminded you of who he was. And that is a major
occurrence. And you're right. But
occurrence.
But the problem there is And I forget who got the goal on the assist. I mean, was it Henrique? It was Henrique. How did he get that wide open? It's a 2-on-1 that on a complete defensive breakdown by Florida.
It was a, yeah, it was a Florida turnover. It was a turnover that led to a rush chance, or even, and it was Fogle.
Yeah, Fogle.
Not Henrique was the second one on a 2-on-1 from Mateus Janmark.
It was Zach Hyman's breakaway, right? Where Florida's pressing, and they're just, and it's fluky, but all the breaks are going Edmonton way.
Yeah,
because the guy tries a slap shot, it's blocked, and it turns into a breakaway, and Hyman buries it, and they have Edmonton has figured out something about Bobrovsky. I firmly believe they have figured out something to get him moving one way and shoot back the other, because I've seen that 3 games in a row now. They are,
well, and it's really interesting, because, and I know, like, yeah, they figured out something with Bobrovsky, and I don't want it, like, I just, because it's so easy to pick on the goalie when things start to go south, and you know, you give up 8 goals. Like, that's really, and he didn't give up all 8, you know, he got pulled.
Right.
But, like, when you're giving up, when you become a sieve, you know, they pulled him. I, on the whole, like, and I even texted this to you, and you're like, well, he's got to stop that. I was like, yes. And the point that I want to make is that your defense and your forecheck is putting your goalie in really bad position to have to make those stops. And at some point, as you have noted, Edmonton had 2 of the best skill guys in the game in Draisaitl and McDavid. And McDavid got to take a day off, still well in front of everybody in terms of points for the playoffs, by the way, at 42. Like, that dude's been a fucking star, like, in every sense of the word. And Draisaitl, it's, like I said, it's very encouraging if you were an Edmonton fan to see Leon Draisaitl the way he's been the last 3 games versus the first 3 games.
Yeah.
And if McDavid, you know, just continues to be who he's been, Florida's in trouble here. Now, all of that said, really hard to come all the way back. You are going back to Florida. You, like, yes, Edmonton has all of the momentum. And I would even argue Florida has all the pressure on them not to mess this up. There are times where you say the first goal of a game doesn't, maybe it may not matter. First goal of a game matters big time. More so if it's Florida scoring, because they need it. They need to see it go in, and they need to see a lead, and then they need to be able to then be like, okay, we're going to do what we do.
Right.
Because they've been on their, they've been on the back of their skates.
I agree.
They've
been thousand. They have to get the first one.
Really out of sorts.
They can't play from behind. I mean, you can give up. Yeah, maybe if you give up the first goal, but then you've got to immediately respond. But I think, like, you're right. Florida's got to get something going in their direction, something positive, play from ahead for the first time in 3 games. You know, and I mean, and you talk about the offside call all you want in game 6. And was that the right call?
Right.
Technically, I guess, but yeah, I could see the Florida side of things saying, how do you make a call that close in that moment in the Stanley Cup final? Hey, credit to Knobloch for making the challenge and getting it right.
Yeah, that's a gutsy
that
call.
That is a very gutsy call.
And as you texted me, arguing that Maurice wouldn't have challenged it if they were in different position is just the most disingenuous bullshit response
it is.
Ever. Like, how do you not challenge
That's
that?
What you guys got and out I don't, there for. Yeah, well, you take a chance at that point. You're still up by 1. Okay, you go. And if you're Edmonton and you're Knobloch, if they lose the challenge, what? Florida gets a power play, right? Who gives a shit when you've got a historic penalty kill going on?
Right now, they are, 45 out of the last 46 penalty kills or something like that? Like, it's obscene how great they've been. And that's the other thing is, another 0-for-3 performance by the Florida power play. Even when they've had chances, they haven't taken advantage of it.
No, like, they're giving up good shorthanded looks the other way. If you're Florida and you're
dangerous shorthanded looks.
If you're Florida and you're going into Game 7, I just completely just, you know, don't even think about the power play. If you get lucky and something happens and you score a goal, great. You can't count on that. The way Edmonton's penalty kill is historically good. I think it's like the greatest penalty kill in the history of hockey. You've got to win 5-on-5. That's the only way you win this game.
Which is such a difference from where they were in the first half of the season when their penalty kill was atrocious.
Absolutely.
When they were really struggling. Like, it's crazy to watch this go this way.
Look, I'll say the other thing. I don't mean to cut you off. For Florida to win this game, somebody other than Barkov has it. Where's Carter Verhaeghe? Where the fuck is Sam Reinhart? I mean, you were second in the league in goals. Yeah, Tkachuk has done some stuff okay. And I think if they're going to win game seven, Tkachuk's the guy I'm going to look at and say, you've got to be the man, because Barkov can't do it all. Reinhardt's got to do something. I mean, you're second in the league to Matthews in goals, and where the fuck have you gone the last few games? Yeah, those Florida has stars too. They really do.
They do.
And they are not.
Florida's the deeper team. We've talked about this all playoffs. Yes. Florida is the deeper team. Like, Florida has all four lines that are dangerous and capable of scoring. All four of them. And I still don't think that's true for Edmonton.
No.
I don't. I don't think that fourth line, which is a fine, like, is fine.
They got a big goal.
But they're not
six?
Dangerous.
Yeah.
They did. Yeah. But I still would argue, like, Florida's is better. Florida has a better fourth line. It's just so crazy. So if Edmonton completes the comeback, one, Canada is going to be the party of the century. Like, all of Canada. Like, I want to go to Canada.
It's fun. Even like places in Canada that weren't supporting Edmonton when this started are now fully in there.
Right.
Even people in Calgary are jumping on the bandwagon. Yes, let's go. You know?
You have to.
You have to.
It's been since 94. 94.
And to do it this way? I mean, come on.
Yes. So if they pull this off, and I'm not sure that they're going to pull it off, but we'll see. They really have taken all the momentum, and they have it firmly in their grasp. Can they finish it? Have they expended too much energy getting back here? I don't know that they have, because of the way the travel schedule has been for this. These two-day travel breaks in between, it's not like a normal playoff series where it's game, day off, game, day off. Like, this two-day off and probably a necessary thing at this point. You know, both teams have got to be used to the distance at this point, like, used to the travel. Like, to get a day to rest, like, an extra day of rest, that's huge. So, let's imagine the worst-case scenario happens here for the Panthers. Where do you go from here if you lose this series?
Yeah, that's a tough one, because, I mean, do you make a coaching change? You got to the finals twice in a row. Maurice has done a good job, but at the same time, you get to the finals, right. You get blown out by Vegas. You get back to the finals, you're going to be, this is a historical collapse. This is, I mean, 1942 was one thing. In 45, the Red Wings came all the way back, forced a game seven and lost. Okay. That's an entirely different era. You're talking about original six teams, not anything remotely close to this. You know, somebody's head has got to, and if you've watched any of the games lately, the last three, and they always show the box, the Panthers ownership in the box, they are immensely frustrated and upset and agitated. I think Maurice is, you know, whether it should be or not, I think he gets the axe. If they collapse this badly, they look for something else. I don't know, man. Bobrovsky's got, see, there's history here, because I watched in 2018, the Columbus Blue Jackets got up 2-0 and the Caps won the next four in a row. So there is history. This is Bobrovsky of the Blue Jackets that I've seen the last few games. Good, but not good enough. And I think that's where he is right now. So if this goes down this way.
The whole team's got to shape up. Bobrovsky's part of the problem.
Yes. But like you're saying, they've got to control that forecheck. They've got to keep people away you can't give up these breakaways. I think the coach gets fired if Florida collapses like this. And I don't know what they do from there. You know, I don't know if they look for something in goaltending, because really you've got all the pieces to win this thing. You really do. And it's like, who are you going to add? I mean, you've added all this stuff. I mean, last year was unexpected and damn near miraculous. And this year is going to be the biggest collapse. Yeah, I'll say it. If they lose, it's the biggest collapse in NHL history. And this is coming from a Caps fan. And this makes ours look
tame. All right. Well, let's go there then. So, game seven tonight, Edmonton, Florida. Who you got?
I got Edmonton. I think, like you said earlier, whoever gets that first goal has the advantage. That's going to be key. Whoever gets that first goal is probably going to win. That being said, like you said, at the outset of this episode, Florida's spooked. They look shaken. They don't look like they've got their game on. Edmonton looks like they've got all the momentum in the world. They've got an entire nation pulling for them. I'm going with Edmonton, man.
You know what? And Dave, you are the king of hyperbole. You are the king of captured by the moment. I love getting texts with you in the middle of hockey games where one team scores and you're like, game over. It's over.
Oh, that's kind of become a running joke, but just now.
backbreaker is the running joke on Hockey Talk. First goal, backbreaker. Offsides, overturned goal, backbreaker. It's all done. Everything's done. It's beautiful.
It is.
By the way, Bret Hart, best backbreaker in all of this. There's a wrestling reference.
That's true.
You can quote me on it. But anyway, here's the thing. Edmonton, I need you to do it for yourselves. I need you to do it for Connor McDavid, who has been the best player in all of hockey during these playoffs. He is, no matter what happens in this game, it is highly unlikely that he is not the guy to finish with the most points in the playoffs. Even if he stays at 42 points for the playoffs, like, that's going to be great. I need you to do it for Leon Draisaitl. I need you to do it for Messier. I need you to do it for Gretzky. I need you to do it for all of the nation of Canada. Florida's the better team. And they're spooked. I want the upset. I'm going to pick the upset. But you're going to be beating insurmountable odds as a superior team to do it. I am buying in on the momentum train. It's going to be great. And I hope that all of Canada celebrates for the next 3 months after this game tonight.
I got a real question for you. Even if Florida wins the cup, does Connor McDavid win the Conn Smythe? I say yes.
He should.
Yeah.
He should. He's been the best player in the playoffs without question. And even when Florida was taking Edmonton's lunch money from them, Connor McDavid was still the best player on the ice and was doing everything. They flipped it. You know, we talked about this earlier. It's flipped now. Barkov is doing everything he possibly can to help this Florida, like, try to win this game for Florida, and the rest of the team isn't coming with him. Whose stars will be stars tomorrow night? I'm going to lean on Draisaitl, McDavid, those two, best two skill players on the ice, out of the groove. We're gonna play the narrative. I'm going to play the narrative, and that's where we're going to leave it. We will be back next week to talk whether or not we're eating crow or not on those decisions, but we'll never know. What we are going to do now, though, Dave, is we are going to take our commercial break, and we have a guest here because we are going to leave the realm of hockey for a little bit to talk a little NCAA basketball, and we will introduce our guest, our surprise guest, when we come back. You are listening to Hockey Talk here on the ChairShot Radio Network, part of thechairshot.com.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Find all your 4th of July needs at low prices, all in the Kroger app. Get USDA Choice bone-in tender ribeye steaks for $7.99 a pound with a digital coupon. Limit 5, then buy 2, get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is your boy Kenny Killer telling you to make sure you check out thechairshot.com, bringing you breaking news, interviews, podcasts galore, everything pro wrestling. Make sure you check it out, thechairshot.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to Hockey Talk here on the ChairShot Radio Network, part of thechairshot.com, where we remind you to always use your head. Head over to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot and invest in a ChairShot shirt. Independence Day is coming. Be on the lookout for those discount codes because they are not that far away. get your chair shot swag, help the cause, help the move, do what we do best. All right. I know you all come here for your weekly dose of hockey, and maybe occasionally Dave and I talk about, you know, Disney parks, because, you know, it's what we do. But we have a special guest today. This came up as I was reacting to a news story in the Chair Shot Sports DM thread that we've got going on. And this fella messaged me and said, hey, you know, if you want to talk about this, maybe I can jump on Hockey Talk for a few minutes. And I was like, sure. Let's talk about that to wrap up the show. So, Dave, why don't you join me in welcoming the executive producer, the grand poobah, the king of the castle, the man I call Mr. Saturday Night, the guy who bitches about how he has to find something to play on Wednesdays when Patrick and Greg don't do a podcast, the guy who, you know, really is the face that runs the place, Mr. PC Tunney. Welcome on to Hockey Talk. As an invited this time, not, you know, trolling Dave while he's trying to talk.
I was going
to
say, who let this guy in here?
Thank you.
Hey, that was about the best introduction I've given you in a long time, man.
Really put you over bandwagon there,
thank you for having me, gentlemen. I appreciate it.
Hey, welcome. Hey, I before we get started, let's just about another sports show on the network, man.
Yeah. Carl is back. Outsiders Edge Carl is back, and him and Ray Cash are going to do as close to a weekly sports podcast as they can do. So there are some other things going on as well that I don't want to talk too much about, but I'm sure some people have noticed an absence of Down the Wire on the Chair Shot Radio Network. Well, PC Tunney's reach is long, far, and wide, so you may see Aesop Mitchell back on the Chair Shot Radio Network here doing Aesop Mitchell kind of things.
A little bit of humble brag there, huh?
I mean, yeah, after the way you set it up for me, I had to kind of back that power you said I had up with a little bit of what's going on.
Well, my reach is long. I'm very proud of myself.
Far and wide.
Far and wide. My mistake. See, you know, usually the number one chair shot villain doesn't show up for Hockey Talk, but we bring PC Tunney on, and here he is. All right, so let's get into why you you're hopping on the show. So this is something that's actually been percolating around for quite a while now, for years even. But it became a little bit more real this week and I'm gonna bring up the article and the announcement. Basically, as I go to look for it, the NCAA leadership has Division I commissioners. That's what it is. NCAA leadership presented Division I commissioners with models that would expand the NCAA tournament by 4 or 8 teams by as soon as 25-26. And this was a report dropped by Ross Dellinger, Yahoo Sports. And the tournament expanding, the NCAA basketball tournament expanding, has been a topic of conversation for quite some time. It's, you know, we're at 68 teams right now. So we add 4 more, that brings it up to 72. Yeah, 8 more, that brings it up to 76. The goal, I think Tunney agrees with me on this, because when you talk expansion and you talk about a nice, neat, even bracket, 64 plus 64 is 128. So this feels like a step that we're trying to sell. And punditry around college basketball, whether it's, you know, the Jeff Goodmans of the world, or the Andy Katz's, John Rothstein over at CBS. Like, the national guys, of course, we're all decrying this as the worst decision in the history of ever. As an NCAA tournament purist myself, like, I love the NCAA tournament. For anybody who knows anything about me, everybody knows I take the first 2 days of the NCAA tournament, the Thursday and Friday of that first weekend, I take those 2 days off. I plop my ass in a Buffalo Wild Wings, and I watch basketball for hours, just telling the wait staff to keep checking on me for beers and wings. I'm going to watch this until I'm tired, until I get my fill, or I have to go bowling, one of the two, whichever comes first. And I love it. I don't know how I feel. I don't know how I feel about playoff expansion in just about any sport these days, because at some point, we all know why, right? It's a money grab. It's a revenue thing. The NCAA tournament is the highest revenue generating event that the NCAA puts on. without question, it's always been the thing that brings them the most money. So I get why they want to expand the tournament or would be in favor of expanding the tournament. And I question, outside of money, what does it do for the NCAA tournament? Dave, Tunney, I cede this to the two of you. We'll start with Tunney since we brought him on. Thoughts on expanding the tournament on any level, let alone to 100?
So you post the article and follow it up with, this is a terrible idea. And I respond immediately with, this thing will be 128 teams before 2040. And I agree with you. It is still a terrible idea. I think honestly, they won't say it, but their goal is probably 96. Because you can have the top 32 teams in the country not start playing until you get to 64. So that means you have 32 first round games to move into a 64 team bracket. That seems a lot more likely. Yeah. Will there still be complaining about the teams on the bubble? 1,000%. So that's not going to change anything. This is purely for money. This is not about expanding it because we think there's more teams that should be in because they're just as good as like the lower 10% of the teams that are in the bracket, right? No. This is money. Right. You hit it right on the head, Patrick. And to be honest with you, sure, go ahead. I'm really indifferent about the whole thing, to be actually honest with you. Football is where I think they do need an expansion, but I think they're going to make it too big. But that's a completely different topic for a completely different show.
Right. Dave, I don't know. Do we need a Rutgers in the NCAA tournament? Do we need a middling, I don't know, I'm trying to think of like a middling ACC team. Do we need like a
Georgia
Clemson?
Tech.
Clemson?
Georgia Tech.
Georgia Tech was terrible, but like Clemson, did Clemson get in? Clemson
this year. Clemson was like a four this year. Like a Syracuse.
Oh, because they were leading the conference at one point. I do remember that. But you know what I mean. Like,
I mean, you guys.
I think in terms of the Big Ten, like I think of those bubble teams in the Big Ten that are kind of waffling. Do they really need to be?
You guys hit it on the head. It's
the dogs.
They're upset. Jesus. I don't even know what happened. It is all about money, you know, like you guys are saying. It's about money and it's about compression of the NCAA into just power conference. And because you've got these conferences that are all merging into these, you know, five or four or three or whatever the hell it is, they want to maximize those the money going to those power conferences by allowing more teams in. I agree with Tunney. I think you're going to see it more in football than in basketball because it's like, well, shit, we already got 68 teams. How far do you? I mean, let everybody in and just have them eliminate each other. But you're not going to do that.
Oh my god.
So,
go ahead,
Tunney.
I'm sorry. I thought you were done. I was just saying the one argument they'll throw at you, and it kind of does make a little more sense, is these teams that are like 50 through however many more teams you want to put in, they have a chance to win a game because they're not playing the top seed because they're on the bottom. They're playing someone in the middle because you're giving that many teams a bye. I am not saying it isn't stupid, but that's something they could come back and say, look at how many more schools actually have a chance to go ahead and win an NCAA basketball. Just playing devil's advocate purely there.
This is like because the automatic bids in the tournaments kind of sometimes wipe out a worthy team.
There's all of the arguments for expanding the tournament. And this is, and I say this is true actually for any of these, like college football playoff, whatever. You know, you'll hear somebody, they'll say a couple of different things. They'll do the, you know, a team has a chance to, has a better chance of earning a victory in the NCAA tournament. What good for you? Make the tournament, like, and make it feel special and exclusive. My favorite disingenuous argument is the more mid-majors will have a chance to make the tournament. That's bullshit. Because you know what doesn't make money for the NCAA tournament? Mid-majors. Nobody wants to see mid-southwestern Wisconsin take on North Southeastern Missouri in a first round, you know, tournament game to then go and play a number one seed. It's why I hate the first four so much, because all it does is create I don't want a low seed mid major one to have to beat up on another low seed mid major for the privilege of losing to a number one seed. I think that is terrible. I think it's disingenuous. I think it shits all over the accomplishment of a conference champion, whether it's through a tournament or otherwise. But to argue that you're going to put more mid-majors in, it's just not so. Maybe one or two. Maybe you get an Indiana State in, who should have been in anyway. They were a team that had earned it, but because they didn't win their conference tournament in the Valley, they didn't get in. But what you do is you're like, oh, well, look, you talked about it. It'll be a Georgia Tech. It'll be these Big Ten SEC schools, maybe the ACC. Once we have our two monster conferences that we're eventually going to have, and that'll be the state of college sports, like those conferences, those power players are going to be the ones who get those bids, because the bid thieves are going to then thieve away from the mid-majors, not from major college basketball programs who, one, likely didn't earn it, probably will have a less than 500 record in conference and make the tournament. Like, we already have teams with, like, two games over 500 making the tournament out of major conferences that they can bounce in the first round, and we want more of that? Like, no. Sorry, Angry Patrick is, like, all in.
Percentage-wise, those extra bids will go to more of the Power 5-ish schools, right? But you will see more mid-majors make it because there's more spots available. They might not have a higher percentage, but they will get more spots because of it. And the more teams you add into the so-called play-in round, where not is a full-out bracket right away, where there's teams not playing in said round, the more teams in that round playing, the more it solidifies it not being a play-in and an actual first round. Right now you have, what, 8 teams playing in it or whatever? Right. You make that 16 or 32 or 64, you have a 96 team. That's a legitimate first. You've actually played in the first round now. You can actually walk into a bar and say, yeah, oh, did you play in the play? No, I played in the fucking first round too. So that's just one other thing.
Should we have that first round? And here's my comparison. This is what
I hate that I'm arguing for it. I do. I hate what I'm doing right now.
You're doing your job. I think of it very much like what we see currently in Major League Baseball in the National League and the fucking wild card right now, where, let's be real, the teams that are playing for wild card spots are like, what, the Cardinals are a game over 500 as we go into today, and they're in the fucking playoffs? Like, that's a playoff team?
The Nationals.
Like, what are we doing here? And that's what I see is going to happen here. Is it's like, what are we doing here? Like, I am very much about self-esteem. Like, I am very much one of those people that will fight against people who are like, everyone gets a trophy. But at some point, when you're playing for a national title, it should be everyone gets a trophy. Like, that's the thing that makes the tournament kind of special, is that you are in because you've earned the right and the ability to show that you can compete for a national championship. Like, and it's already bad enough. Like, I always feel for those mid-major squads that lose in their conference tournament because of the nature of the beast. You know, I talked about Indiana State. Indiana State was this year's example. Indiana State was heads and tails above the rest of the Valley. Lost in the semifinal or final of the conference tournament and was relegated by virtue of being a mid-major that had the audacity to lose to, like, Oregon or somebody.
Let's talk about the NIT for a second, and the fact that some of these schools
the
that feel
the, FU,
the fact that some of these schools that felt like they should have made the NCAA tournament are too good for the NIT. They were robbing us of the secondary tournament we used to have that was actually interesting to watch. That used to be the next group of teams that didn't make the NCAA tournament.
It used to have a pretty decent prestige to it, too.
Now it's like, let's pass the torch around to the third or fourth tier. Like, CBI almost has better teams.
Right. It's bonkers to me the way that it works. Like, Indiana this year was the example. North Carolina the year before. And it's like, well, we're North Carolina. We don't play. Well, okay. You know, take your ball and go home.
Right.
Like, what? That's sad.
Why? Why go to a very televised situation against another good team and have your guys who are freshmen and sophomore that are going to be back next year get some more experience? Why do that? That doesn't make any sense at all.
And I will say that part of the problem, part of the impact of this is now the idea of name, image, and likeness and the amount of dollars that are involved there and the change to the transfer rules where you no longer have to sit out a season if you transfer. So now that we actually have true free agency in college basketball, more and more players who are out want to start their journey on the way out. If they're not, it's like college football and opting out of a bowl for the pros, except you're opting out of your secondary tournament for the opportunity to go somewhere else where you feel you might have a better opportunity to either win, make more money, or just play more. And so some of these teams, out of an abundance of fear of losing half their roster, like Khalil Ware made it very clear he had no intention of playing in an NIT game. Like, he said it. And, you know, he's going to get drafted. He'll be a wonderful bench guy who watches a lot of people play and make plenty of money in the NBA.
But like I said, then take the freshmen and sophomores with you and go play there, you know?
Well, that also then comes into the nature of your roster. That's not the team, right?
Yeah, right. I get it.
Do you guys think there's like you know how people go to NASCAR races to watch the car crash, that they want more teams in there to create even more chaos? Because March Madness is the greatest chaotic situation of all time.
I don't think you can create any more chaos. I don't think that kind of – I just don't think that will create more chaos. You're going to see less chaos the more teams you put in, just because they're just not going to – they're going to fall off.
You think? I mean, if the tournament showed us anything, it's like, yeah, all these teams are vulnerable in one way or another.
Except for UConn.
UConn could beat the Wizards.
I'm gonna speak to what I know and what I've seen for years and years and years and following the NCAA tournament. The first weekend is all about the upsets and the excitement of Cinderella. The second weekend, though, that's when the clock strikes midnight and you start to see the real programs kind of rise to the top. And most of the times, even in an NCAA tournament where the unpredictable can happen, the teams that are built to finish and make a Final Four run, make a Final Four run. NC State is the exception, not the rule, 9 times out of 10. And they were a great story.
George
a
Mason.
Team that, you know, well, and you're going to get those. And you get those more and more because parity is a little more realistic. However, I do question whether parity is going to still be a thing. Again, in this world of NIL and now revenue sharing, as the NCAA has come out now and said that every school is expected to, you know, compensate players up to $22 million in revenue sharing out of their sports department, which is, it's going to be interesting to see how that even impacts kind of power two schools, you know, the SEC and Big Ten, like those lower tiered Big Ten schools. Because when you look at a revenue sheet, that impacts all sports. And those bigger schools that generate more revenue are going to have the advantage for revenue sharing with their players up to that $22 million. Whereas a school like my beloved University of Illinois is looking at cutting programs because they don't have the additional revenue to compensate those programs with revenue sharing. And so things like those non-revenue generating sports, like our wrestling, men's gymnastics. Illinois is one of the few schools left that has a men's gymnastics program. Goodbye, not happening. There was talk of, you know, Illinois adding a hockey program. Not happening, too expensive. Now you have to share that money. If you're that school, you're going to be able to bring in that talent. Now that we have NIL donors that are able to put ridiculous amounts of money towards a player, that a dude that transferred to Washington, the University of Washington, they ponied up $2 million for that guy to go play at the University of Washington. And he is getting paid a shit ton of money on a team that is frankly just an average basketball team. Coleman Hawkins, again, from my beloved Illinois, is playing at Kansas State. Kansas State paid $2 million in NIL donor money to have him come play there. And schools that can do that are not Indiana State or Yale. Like, they just can't, and they're not gonna be able to be.
I think the rubber band effect from this, though, is gonna happen very quickly. Teams, schools, and people who put up this kind of money are gonna see this for one or two seasons not happen, and they're gonna go, this isn't the way to do it. People are going to find out. There's going to be some learning curve here. There's going to be some people that have enough money that they don't care. But there are going to be some places where, I guess it wasn't worth the $2 million.
I do think there are teams that are approaching the NIL thing very, very differently than the way some of these other schools are. Like, you don't hear about some of these blue blood programs dropping, you know, millions upon millions of dollars to get themselves kind of quote unquote where they need to be. Illinois has been priced out of a couple of recruitments this year because they weren't willing to pay what they're willing to pay. Now, allegedly, they're on the cusp of securing a big commitment from a five-star kid today where they outbid Arizona is kind of the talk. So
there are usually only a very small percentage of schools in both football and basketball that, if you're that good, will guarantee you a lot of money because you'll be a high draft pick. Some of them have to look for the long term too. Like, $1 million now is not worth being in a poorer program with a worse coach than getting into the top five draft pick because you played with better players and had the best coach.
True. And all of this is to say, as we wrap up the program, the reason I don't like tournament expansion and the idea of tournament expansion is because I feel like it is a dilution of the tournament itself, and that the quality of game in those early rounds is going to go down. You are going to still see an upset. You're still going to see upsets. Those are going to happen. Parity in college basketball is very real. But there's more time for a team to not get upset if they get to sit and wait while somebody else works their way through an extra 32 game, you know, a round of 32 or whatever. And I just don't feel great about that. And it's a shame because I understand that it's about revenue dollars. And that's just, it is what it is. And it'll happen sooner rather than later. It just makes me a little sad. So, all right, honey, thank you for jumping on this edition of Hockey Talk to talk a little NCAA basketball.
Hey, wait, before we get out
of here.
Before
tell everybody.
Honey, who you got? Panthers, Oilers, game seven.
I mean, it's really hard not to root for the Oilers. Connor McDavid, it's been so long since Canada had a cup. So I got to take Florida Panthers, getting back to some Panther hockey and just going back to the first three games of the series where they showed how they got healthy at the end of the year. They were definitely the best team in all of hockey.
They should. They should win. But go Canada. All right. Now tell everybody where to find you on the Chairshot Radio Network and follow you on the socials if you would like.
Find me at PC Tunney, Chairshot Radio Network, all your favorite streaming platforms. Don't forget to listen to Bandwagon Nerds this one time tomorrow on Tuesday.
You can find me on X at Attitude Ag, that is at Attitude AGG, Facebook.com/Attitude of Aggression, and at Attitude of Aggression, all one word, Instagram and Threads.
And you can follow me on the X Twitter at Wrestling Realist, that is at WRESTLNGREALIST. Listen to me on Monday, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays here on the Chairshot Radio Network. Mondays, this week, Mondays talking hockey. Usually it's nerdy stuff, but that'll be on Tuesday with Bandwagon Nerds. And then Wednesdays, you know, if his son isn't stranded at Six Flags trying to find his phone, you'll hear me and Greg DeMarco talking wrestling on the Greg DeMarco show. Because it's always something with the two of us. Ain't that right, Tony? All right. As it is, that's going to do it for this week's edition of Hockey Talk. Next week, we will be able to celebrate a Stanley Cup champion. And maybe we'll get to some of the moves that happened this week that we didn't talk about, because there were some significant players on the move that we didn't even get to, Dave. So big deal. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you, PC Tunney, for jumping on the program once again. Hope you all have a great week. Enjoy the game tonight. It's going to be a doozy. You have been listening to Hockey Talk here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of the Chairshot.com.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.